Good morning, this is Roy Lowy, and welcome to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network. My guests today are Mr. Evan Eggers, president of O2Cruise.com, the Internet's cruise superstore, with his latest on the cruise scene. Associate producer Bob Fisher will chat about his recent trip to India. My guest, communications director for Kaowood Campgrounds, will be with us. Destination Worldview journalist Carol Matthews as well. Then Bob Fisher will take us to North Carolina, where aviation all started with the Wright brothers. So let's go straight to Evan. Evan's on the phone, and good morning, Evan.
Good morning, Roy.
How about a little update on the Pride of Hawaii? You know, we're all aware of the negative press the ship had been getting because of bad service and standards. Has it changed?
Yeah, let's talk about that. The ship was initially very promising when it first had its inaugural because Norwegian seemed to have really gotten its act together after the Pride of Aloha had had initial problems. But after that, it seemed as if, and the challenge, so I've spoken both to passengers who have sailed on board Pride of Hawaii recently, Pride of America, rather, I'm sorry, and also Colin Beach at Norwegian, who was talking about what they're seeing in the surveys that are coming back from
right.
Pride of America now.
Well, you know, the whole concept was a good concept, but it just, for some reason or other, it just really got off to a bad start.
Yeah, it did, and the challenge was is that they had to hire all new people, because these are U.S. flag vessels that had to hire American employees,
right.
American standards, and American labor laws.
Right.
If there wasn't a built-in base of such employees, they had to hire them all, train them new. It's like, you know, imagine hiring, 2,000 brand new people for a job and setting them loose.
Exactly.
So it took some time to get the training wheels off. So. What people have said, the feedback we've gotten is that it's gotten a lot better, and that what Norwegian surveys are seeing is the standards are now coming up to what they expect and becoming consistent with the rest of the fleet. And the passengers that we've spoken with on Pride of America who have sailed, you know, both within the past month or so as well as several months ago, we see that same trend coming along. So although there are still some spots that need fixing, for example, people are checking in the staterooms not as clean as it should be.
Right.
Things like that, there's certainly a definite trend to improvement, and the consensus is, from all the passengers that I've spoken to, is that it's the pros of the trip outweigh the cons, and they would do it again.
Well, that's good news. But, I mean, what's the excuse for not having rooms cleaned? I mean, maids are maids, or cleaners are cleaners. I mean, it doesn't take any great talent to do that. It just seems like it's supervision.
Well, it is, and what Norwegian has said is that a lot of people who are new, a lot of the new folks sign on, being entranced as a potential employee on board a big, glamorous cruise ship for a life of fun in the sun and
right.
all this kind of stuff. And then on board, it's quite a different thing. They're working very long days with very few days off, and a substantial proportion of these people who the idea sounds good to, once they do it for a couple weeks, it doesn't sound good. So right when they start up, they're dealing with tremendous employee turnover. Just people bailing out on them, so
yeah.
to speak. And so they're having to constantly bring in new people, and then gradually, so now they're just about over that. The employee turnover is now down to, you know, what they would expect rather than a large proportion on a regular basis, and they're keeping people. So now they don't need to constantly retrain new people, so forth and so on.
Well, that's
so
good news. That's
a point of stability. So people who are going right now, I think if you're sailing on the ship right now, you would probably still find some spots where the service and standards wouldn't be up to what you'd see on, you know, a more established cruise ship. But the good news is the people who are coming off and customers were talking to us saying, yeah, you know, this or that could have used improvement. But overall, it was still a great experience, and I'd do it again.
Now, Carnival's been assigned a new ship, I understand.
Yeah, that's right. And the Carnival Corporation family of cruise lines, they order ships way in advance from these shipyards. This in particular is Fincantieri. And, of course, Carnival owns, you know, a bunch of cruise lines, Holland America, Costa,
right.
Seabourn, so forth and so on. And it's not always clear which cruise line will get which ship is pre-ordered. So Carnival announced last week that this 3,006-passenger ship, which will represent a new class for Carnival, is going to be assigned to the Carnival brand. So it'll be delivered in 2008. It's being built by Fincantieri, which built some of my favorite ships. I don't know how you feel about them, but I think that it's a beautiful line.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, exactly.
Ship. They do a good job. And this is part of the same agreement. So to give you an idea of who else got the ships that were on this one contract, Princess got one, P&O got one. They did a redesign of Queen Victoria. So this shipyard does a lot of work for Carnival.
And what's the time frame?
The time frame is 2008. Spring of 2008 is when that ship will come into service.
Yeah.
And it'll have a huge spa, It'll have a thermal suite. It'll be the first Carnival ship that has one of those thalassotherapy pools,
right.
One of those, which is basically like an enormous jacuzzi with lounge chairs built into it, which is just a lovely place to take a nap.
Sounds good to me. Now, there was one other thing that that came up was the rash of Chinese nationals trying to sneak into Canada by cruise ships. Tell us just a moment. We only have a moment. Tell us quickly about that.
Well, basically, the Chinese nationals had found a weak spot in sneaking into North America. And what they were doing is they had fake South Korean passports. They would sail on a New England itinerary cruise up into Canada. They would get off the ship in whatever the port of call was, and they'd just disappear. And then only after the fact, after they disappeared, and the authorities had dug in, would they find out, oh, these were not really Korean tourists. They were actually Chinese citizens. So in September, 17 people who tried this did it, and they're still missing. Now, of course, the Canadian authorities have wised up to this now. So just last week, six more people tried. And when the Canadian authorities saw people with South Korean passports were on board the ship, they came on and interviewed them and find out, yep, sure enough, this is six more people who are trying this trick. And, of course, they got caught.
Amazing. Evan, thank you once again, and look forward to chatting with you next week. It's always a pleasure.
Have a great show.
Right. Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye.
Totally playful. Totally never tried that before. Totally Club Med. Introducing the new Total All-Inclusive Club Med with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, totally barefoot time. Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
Well, that's a little snappy music to introduce our next guest to is our associate producer, Mr. Bob Fisher, who has just returned from India, and I'm not too sure if he's quite awake yet, and his body clock is back on, but I must say that it's certainly a pleasure to have him back, and he's going to chat a little bit about his India trip. Because we're going to cover it a little bit more in detail at a later date, and he also is going to bring us give us a little update on a new feature on our website, which is the editorial page. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Roy. What time is it?
Yeah, well, in India, it's probably about 10 hours later.
What time zone am I in?
You're in the Canadian time zone.
Okay, and I've got my pants on back to front or right in front. Just check these things, will you?
Yeah, I know. I have a sign on my door. Please get dressed before leaving.
I don't know how much time I've got, but I'll just give you a bit of an introduction here that I got back the day before yesterday from what has to have been probably the most important media trip I've ever been on at any time. I was part of a group of 24 international travel journalists, travel consultants, and other travel professionals from around the world. And we were the guests of the Tourism Corporation of the province of Gujarat in northwest India, which is a developing area in terms of tourism, a fascinating area. I personally also spent about 4 extra days in Bombay, or as others call it, Mumbai.
Right.
In terms of North American, it was an amazing experience. You will remember that our superb Destination Worldview writer, Suzanne Wright, did a previous piece for us on India. And then I hope to follow up on what she wrote. Because we were very much in a very rural area, and in which there are some amazing sites that really should be World Heritage sites. They aren't yet. We were also there, by the way, for the largest carnival and festival on the planet. It's called the Navaratri, which was great fun. We were on national television. We were on stage dancing every night about midnight. It was just incredible. And I'll have a lot more to tell you about that in probably in the new year.
Well, we're pretty much filled up, I think, through the new year.
Yeah, we're right till Christmas, but it's going to take a while for me anyway to process this particular trip, as most people discover when they go to India.
And some amazing photos, I would say, as well.
Yeah, it was incredible. Every meter that was something incredible to see. But can I just say one thing? I think I have never met a more welcoming, warm people in general. I had no reservations, no fears, no hesitancies, other than you have to be very careful traveling in India if from a medical point of view if you are a hyperhygienic North American. But the Indian people are the most gracious people I think I've ever met on the planet.
Well, that's certainly good to hear, certainly in this day and age, that
and
there are places that one is readily accepted without any question. Yeah.
And they are an emerging society. Of course, they are a developing nation of 1.3 billion people, and that kind of says it all. But I had the opportunity to meet with, other than government officials, I even met the chief government official of Gujarat himself. But a lot of young, 30-ish entrepreneurs, and this is the new India. And I think the rest of the world should really keep their eyes on India. I believe it is an emerging superpower with the rise of a middle class that has a global perspective, is really educated, and has basic philosophies that fit in very well with global marketplaces.
Bob,
we
look forward to hearing more about that. We only have a little over a minute.
Okay.
I'd like you to touch on the new editorial page on our site, if you will.
I really want to draw attention to, for our readers and listeners, we have a new feature. If you go right to the home page of our web magazine, www.ttrn.com, and right there on the left at the top, you will see a link that says our editorial page. This is something new and something a little different from most travel web magazines. And Peter Flaherty, one of our best writers, has done the first piece called How Should New Orleans Be Rebuilt? And given what has occurred in there, I recommend everybody read that, because Peter has defined some very important issues that we all have to think about in terms of how are we going to help those people get back on their feet. And I'll just finish there with, he quotes the very beginning of the article. He draws attention to Louis Armstrong's classic jazz standard, Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans? And that really says it all. So I really encourage everyone to go to the website and read Peter's editorial, and there will be other editorials coming along as we put them up there.
Well, Bob, I thank you, and welcome home, and we'll talk to you again soon. We got to go to break.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye for now.
Bye.
bed with unlimited drinks, all-day dining, world-class accommodations, 64 sports and activities, all gratuities and more for a totally great price. So you can totally forget your wallet. Call today for a totally unlimited, totally together, Book now and save on a 7-night total all-inclusive vacation to Club Med in the Caribbean, Bahamas, or Mexico. Call today. You'll totally want to do it again.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fare starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back, and we're joined by a very interesting person, Mr. Mike Gast, who is the communications director for KOA Campgrounds. And good morning, Mike.
Good morning. How are you doing?
We're doing terrific. There's so much to cover with KOA. First of all, your the brochure and the directory is most impressive. My first question, if I may, is how many campgrounds are there actually?
Right now, we have about 450 KOAs across, all the way across coast to coast and on in North America, U.S. and Canada. We actually have 34 campgrounds up in Canada right now, the rest in the U.S., and we actually have 7 in Japan.
7 in Japan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now these are, you franchise this out, do you not?
Yes, so about 23 of our campgrounds are company-owned properties that are run by KOA Incorporated, and the rest of them are franchised operations.
Okay, so Japan seems so far away, and when you talk about driving, we don't think about other parts of the nations just driving within their own nation, and of course, why not?
Well, it's a very popular activity in Japan as it is in the United States and Canada, but what makes it so popular over there? I guess the same thing that makes it popular here. We've got in the United States, we've got over 4,000 of our small cabins, cottages, and lodges are right on the campground, so you don't have to have an RV or a tent to get into the camping lifestyle.
Yeah, well, that's always the question: can they enjoy the campground if they don't, have an RV?
Oh, you bet. And the only thing you need to get going on a in a cabin, cottage, or lodge at any KOA campground is a sleeping bag and your cooking utensils, and you're in business.
Right. So there are RV spots, there are campgrounds, and there are also cabins.
Yes.
Now, is that true of all the campgrounds or just some?
We've got, it's about 99%. We've got a couple that don't allow the cabins due to local ordinances. We actually have a campground at Circus Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas right on the Strip. There's a KOA right there. And we also have 2 in the Florida Keys, at Fiesta Key and Sugarloaf Key. The entire islands are RV parks.
Right,
but they do. But those facilities don't have cabins on them.
Right. Well, it was interesting. The week before we knew you were coming on, we asked some of our listeners for some comments of people who have been to the KO day campgrounds. And one was interesting. It said, without KOA, I could never have made my first trips to Orlando, mostly Disney. And the double-decker bus was not only a money-saving way to get to the parks, but it was fun just to ride. And we have tented, camped, and used their cabins. And I've never been to some place so international, in their words. We always had a neighbor that could not speak English, and one we could not even guess what language they spoke. So one can understand how that could happen in Orlando. But a very positive comment, I thought.
Well, we've actually get quite a few of European visitors to come and use our campgrounds as a way to see the United States. They'll fly into a major spot like Orlando or Albuquerque for the Southwest and rent an RV from an operation such as Cruise America, and spend their vacation traveling around RVing and staying in our campgrounds and see America that way, because there's a great desire on the part of Europeans to see the real America, and there's no better way to see the real America than in an RV.
Now, I think the obvious question is, with the higher prices of fuel, is that having any impact on your industry?
It'll definitely have an impact. What we found, isn't the first time this has happened. KOA was the only one of several companies involved in camping back in the 70s. We were the only one that really survived the Arab oil embargo, and that changed our business quite considerably. Of course, that was a time when it wasn't so much the price of gas, it was the availability. You just couldn't find it. That's not the situation today, but what we find is that RVing is a lifestyle choice. It's not like, for instance, you know you have to fill up the family car once a week, and it's given, and you can control some of that usage by
right.
carpooling to work or carpooling to the kids' activities. RVing, but it's still given, you're probably going to drive 12,000 to 15,000 miles a year in the family car. RVing, you've made this investment, if you invested in a nice RV, you might have spent anywhere from $25,000 to $100,000 on this unit. And so that it's an investment in that lifestyle, and also you don't drive it 12 to 15,000 miles a year. You might drive it 2 or 3,000 miles a year, and so the average cost of a trip, the average cost of using your RV in additional gas might be a few hundred dollars. It's not thousands and thousands of dollars like it is in the family car.
Now, how far in advance? Now, I'm sure that there are some campgrounds that are a lot more popular than others, but how far in advance would one normally, at least during the summer months, have to make a reservation?
Well, we always encourage that, and we actually have live reservations that are going to be available online now at KOA.com, our website, where, by the way, you can also go online and get take visual tours of every campground. There's photographs of every campground up there. Every campground has their own 800 number, so when you dial in to make the reservation, you're actually talking to the campground. So they can tell you what the weather's like and what their availability is and what types of sites they have around. We always encourage them to make reservations, but drive-ups are always welcome. In the summertime on the weekends, it gets a bit risky. So typically on the weekends, they might fill up on a typical weekend 2 or 3 days before the weekend.
Well, because this is true.
Early in the week, you're probably safe.
In any tourism industry, it's always wise, if you can, to make a reservation. But it's nice to know that they do accept drive-ins. Because you're driving along, you just decide, well, let's take a turn here, we'll go this way, and they'll look at the guide and say, well, there's a KOA grounds, let's give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always good to know that you can just drive in and take your chance. Now, I've noticed that the KOA is having a giveaway, a 30,000 free campsites on May 13th.
Actually, it was May 13th last year. It's going to be May 12th in 2000.
Okay, May 12th. Is it? Okay.
And this will be the third year we've done this, and we do it for a couple of reasons. One, just to give people a reason to get out there and experience KOA, and quite a few of our cabins are also in the inventory for that day. And of course, people stay over on Saturday and enjoy it too. But we give away Friday, and we also use it as a. There's a lot of activities going on our campgrounds, and we'll use those activities to help raise funds for our main charity, which is KOA Care Camps for Children with Cancer. We support a network of about 35 campgrounds in North America that provide summer camp experiences for children with cancer. And the first year we did it, we raised about $25,000 in one day.
for that charity. And last year we did it. We doubled that, or more than doubled it. We were about $60,000 raised from campers for that charity. But again, it's all free will offerings raised through ice cream socials and that type of thing.
Now, how does one qualify for this?
All you have to do is call up and make a reservation, and we'll start taking reservations for that May 12th weekend on February 1st. And you can either make them online or call the campground you're interested in directly. And it's a completely free night, no strings attached. You just make your reservation and show up.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, what about kids in terms of facilities? And
we are very, very tuned into children, and we consider ourselves family campgrounds. And all of our campgrounds have playgrounds, and then all but I believe three have, again, it's a local thing, but all but three have heated swimming pools. We were probably the camping chain that went that way the quickest. We've got convenience stores on that, so anything that the kids will need is available at the convenience stores. Probably a new change in the industry in the last 5 years has been activities for families. We're finding that families are spending more time on the campground than before. We have more of our parks becoming destinations and not just places to stay while you keep on looking at the local attractions. So people are expecting to be fed and to be entertained while they're on the campground, and that means the kids too. So you'll find several of our facilities with activities directors that are geared for the kids. And so you see a lot of bike parades and miniature golf tournaments and that type of thing going on continuously. So it's absolutely a great place for kids. It's hard to find somebody in their 20s that grew up in a camping family that doesn't cherish the time that they spend on the KOAs with their parents.
Now, suppose I've never been to a campground before, a KOA one especially. Can I have a look at it before I arrive? Can you check out the facilities prior to making reservations?
You mean with an actual visitor or online?
Well, I would think as an actual visitor.
Oh, certainly. Certainly. Yeah, we definitely welcome visitors. Anybody's welcome to come in and look around. We've got our staff all in our trademark now is yellow shirts. So we've got our staff in many, many thousands of yellow shirts out there. So you just find a yellow shirt staff out there and ask any questions you like. Again, each campground has their own 800 number. You can find all those 800 numbers at thekoa.com or in the printed directory, which is free online, or you can pick it up at the campground, at any one of our campgrounds for free also.
So I can drive in and say, gee, I'd just like to have a look around. I'm going to go through here next year, and can you show me around the site, and I can then make a decision.
Oh, they would love that. It's almost all of our businesses are privately owned franchises. So these are the livelihood for these families. There's many KOAs that are mom and pop operations that are run by couples with maybe some help from some work campers.
Well, that makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Oh yes, there's personal pride taken. Mm-hmm. There's ownership. These are the owners that you're talking to at the front desk. And they love to show it off. You know, they're very proud of what they've done with this piece of property and the great times and great memories they create for families.
That's super, Mike. Now, someone wanting to make reservations, of course, you can go online. Give us, if you will, your website, and if there's a toll-free number, that as well.
The best way to go is through the website, which is www.koa.com. And when you get to that website, you'll see a listing of every campground. You search it out by state off the map, and every campground has its own 800 number. There is no central 800 number, so you just dial into that campground's toll free number and start asking questions or making your reservations.
Well, it's great. I appreciate you taking the time to join us today and sharing all this with your audience, and we look forward to possibly talking to you again, Mike. Thanks very much. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Well, that was Mike Guest from KOA. Interesting for those who have never done the camping, RVing type scene, but I think the more I read about it, the more enjoyable it looks. We got to go to break, and when we come back, we're going to be with Carol Matthews, who is going to take us on a mental journey to the Netherlands. So Stay tuned.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent. USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we're back, and we're joined by travel journalist Carol Matthews today. And Carol's going to take us on a destination worldview to the Netherlands. Good morning, Carol.
Hello, Roy.
And I must, first of all, welcome you to Talking Travel. And for those who are listening online, you can follow Carol's article by going to Destination Worldview, where you can enjoy her in-depth article and some really fabulous photos that I was really impressed with. And you can do this while Carol and I just chat about the towns of Leiden and Delft. Did I say that correctly?
Leiden is the pronunciation.
Leiden, okay. And the other one is?
Delft.
Delft, okay. Well, take us on this little journey. It's really quite intriguing. It's a great article, and I guess you can start off with just getting there, I would guess.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned in the article, I had never heard of Leiden before, and so I was taking a trip to Amsterdam on my own, all alone, and in the brochure and the information that I received, there was just a mention that there was a botanical garden in Leiden.
Right.
There's one in Amsterdam as well, and I visited it. But so I thought, well, gee, you know, I've got some time. Why don't I just hop the train and go?
And I thought what was interesting with the way you started out was more than wooden shoes and windmills. And because they travel appealed to me because you can finally see and touch the things you've only read about, meet people with new, different ideas, discover places you didn't know existed before. How true is that?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, it's wonderful. That's why you should always plan an extra day or two wherever you travel so you can take in those things you weren't expecting.
And so now, Leiden is about 35 minutes southwest of Amsterdam. Is that correct?
Yes, by train.
By train, okay.
Yes, and it's a lovely city. Actually, it's if you want to go someplace that really shows what Holland is truly like, Leiden and Delft are both cities that will give you a real taste of the country. Leiden was first settled around 1000 BC, and here in North America, we think 400 years is old, and there, you know, we're talking about 1,000 years. It's so wonderful to see things that have been around that long.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'll get it right this time. Leiden is also the birthplace, as you mentioned, of many of the Dutch painters like Rembrandt.
Yes, and actually next year is the 200th anniversary of Rembrandt's birthday. So there's going to be a huge, I think it's 300, huge celebration in Holland all over the country.
Yeah, I missed the first 100 years.
Pardon me?
I missed the first 100 birthdays.
Yes. So it's, yes, I mean, Rembrandt was born there, Leyden was born there, Jan Steen was born there. I mean, a lot of people, a lot of famous people came from that area. There was philosophers Descartes and Dr., I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Boerhaave, I think.
Well, you can pronounce it any way you like, because if I can't get Leyden right, you can say whatever you like.
So it was, and another thing that I didn't know was that Leyden, that several of, not several, all of the pilgrims that came to New England on the Mayflower, they first lived for about 12 years in Leyden until they felt that they really wanted to go to a new world and you know, keep their own religions and not have to worry about other people interfering. Although the country was very welcoming, it also welcomed other religions and other beliefs, and they wanted to be someplace where they could hold their own.
And the oldest university in the Netherlands is located there, as well as many museums,
yes.
I understand.
Yes, the Leyden University is the oldest, and the Botanical Garden is associated with the university there.
And tell us about the tulips.
Oh, the tulips. It's amazing. I mean, I had no idea. I love tulips. We all know tulips come from Holland. Today, they originally come from Turkey. And it was in the 16th century that a doctor named Carolus Clusius, who was asked to come to the botanical garden and set up a medicinal garden, he brought some of the bulbs that he had from Turkey and planted them there. And then things went crazy because there was an absolute mania about the tulips.
Right.
Yes?
That's lovely, yes.
In the 16th century... early 17th century, some of the tulip bulbs were so valuable that they were equal to the price of a furnished, expensive home. We're looking at thousands of guilders back then, it would have been.
And
amazing.
And you said, and apparently there were many fortunes were made and lost for the love of a flower.
That's right. They were used for... can't think of it.
Well, it was originally, according to your article, is that a lot of them were all of this started through the medical community, I guess,
yes.
and they were looking for different, as they seem to be getting back to today, they're looking for different cures through these natural plants, which there's a big study going on today with that, I think.
Absolutely. Yes, no, that's why Clusius was brought, he was from Frankfurt originally, he was brought to the university to set up a garden to study the medicinal plants. But
right.
he had a sort of a bigger concept, and he actually was the creator of botany, the first study of plants just for themselves, and that's how the tulip fit in, because he had traveled the world and collected different plants, and when he came to Leyden, he brought these plants with him.
And can you imagine the travel in those days? Couldn't have been very easy, could it?
Oh, my gosh.
To go to all of these places to collect beautiful plants, and then, of course, the garden, as you say, was completely restored as close as possible in 1990.
Yes, and it is, when you go there, there's the botanical garden is very large. The original Clusius garden is quite small, and it's just a part of it. So when you come into that area, you are literally walking back in time.
And of all of the 1,000 plants, that there were only 30 that couldn't
right.
be found. Is that correct?
That's right.
How amazing is that? Incredible.
Yeah. Yes. So they replaced those 30 that they couldn't find with plants that were as similar to them as possible. Those 30 plants are now extinct. So it's not that they could not be found, it's that they weren't there to begin with.
Oh, I see. Okay. That makes some sense, doesn't
yes.
it?
It's not like they're hiding somewhere in the world still. They're extinct now, so
okay, well, let's hop back on the train, if we will, and get over to Delta. That's, what, another 20-minute ride further south of The Hague. Is that true?
That's right. Actually, The Hague is another wonderful place to stop. It's the seat of the government of the Netherlands, and it has a little, it's called a miniature city of Holland, and it's like seeing Holland or in miniature. It's like you can look at the whole country in miniature. So, but that was just an aside. Yes, you come to Delft, and by the way, the trains are great. Go second class, buy a return ticket. It's cheaper than buying a ticket each way.
Right.
And they're clean, they're fast, it's wonderful.
Now,
so when you arrive in Delft, you can either take a taxi to the Delft factory and museum, or you could actually walk. It would take about 20 minutes. But I've got to tell you, Roy, it's hilarious, for me at least, directions in the Netherlands or in Holland. You have to, the first 2 days I was there, I would walk for 20 minutes, you know, and get lost and not find things. The signs aren't that great. They're in Dutch, first of all, and sometimes you can't make the comparison. And sometimes the streets or the canals aren't marked.
Right.
And the maps leave out streets and all that sort of thing. So walking, you can do it, but you should ask directions maybe every 10 minutes.
But you say that the wonderful thing about European cities is still the easiest and best way to get around is walking, because they were built hundreds of years ago when walking was the primary form of transportation. And how true that is, because
yeah.
I've been to so many, you know, of these lovely small cities. Even London, I walk everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's just a great, you take your time, you stop, have some lunch if you like, and
right.
It's
really not that far. I mean, you can cover a lot of distance.
You certainly can, even with short legs, like I have.
I've got both.
you and I both. Now, tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, obviously, the food, there's a couple of things, of course, is the Delft ware, which
yes.
is very famous. Why don't we start yes. with that?
Okay. Well, Delft ware was very famous. It's declining now, I found, when I visited the manufacturer. People who have the biggest interest in it now have either inherited it or, you know, there's a small group who still collect it. But it's beautiful, and they have different, it's not just the blue and white anymore. They have the different colors. There's a basic black with colors, and then there's sort of more of a gold and red. It's really lovely, and it's very, very collectible. But you have to make sure that you get the ones that are real, because Delft is the name of a city, and it can't be copyright.
Right.
So Delft is printed on the bottom of all the fakes, but that doesn't mean they're real.
Right, so you need a certificate of authenticity, I guess.
That's right, yes. And the best place, the only original factory left, is the De Porcelain Flair, I think. Anyway, and that translates to the porcelain jar. It was founded in 1653, and it's still in operation today. And it's a wonderful factory to tour. And what impressed me the most, I mean, the pieces, the dishes were wonderful, and the tulip jars actually are really neat. But the thing that impressed me the most was the life-size replica of Rembrandt's Night Watch.
Uh-huh.
In Blue Delft.
Yes.
And there are hundreds of tiles in it. Each tile is, you know, just a section of the painting. And it took over a year to complete. And it was done for the anniversary coming up next year.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, maybe we should all go back.
Well, definitely. I think we should.
There are two things before we finish, and I think that are particularly interesting. One is the chocolates. I can't help myself when we go to these places and they're the foods and the lunches, and the other would be when to go. So if you would, let's just talk about chocolates if we can.
Okay. The Leonidas chocolate shop, the Leonidas chocolates are actually from Belgium, but you would never know it the way they're shown and displayed in the shops here. They're just wonderful. Beautiful. You can buy tins, lovely decorated tins of either the chocolate powder or chocolate chips to make your hot chocolate, or the chocolates themselves are so beautifully decorated. And as I said, you know, it's a great gift to take home if you can stand to keep them closed that long. I actually ate a few that were supposed to go to other people, but I didn't tell them that.
Exactly.
But anyway, and the best time to go, I mean, depending on what you want to see, if you're going for the tulips and the spring flowers, definitely go in April and May. That is the absolute best time. But it's also the busiest time to be there.
Right.
I went in June and or late May, and the tulips were pretty well gone, but it was not really all that busy, and it was great. You could walk, you could, you know, take the buses, get on the tours, no problem.
And of course, the shoulder months too, like September, October, November, are usually a good times to go.
That's right, especially if you're interested in the museums and that type of thing, because that's always, you know, the quietest times are the best times. And I found, of course, it was just one time I was there, it's a lot warmer than they think it is, or that you're told, sort of, because I went sort of expecting to be cool, and I was warm all the time.
Well, you might, first of all, as everyone knows, that this article is up on Destination Worldview on our website, which is ttrn.com. But you mentioned in your article, first of all, we all know it, getting there from North America to Amsterdam is quite easy. And then, as you mentioned earlier, the trains are quite convenient and quite comfortable. You recommend the Holland website, which is www.holland.com.
Yeah.
And we suggest that everybody have a look at that and have a look at the article. And it was just wonderful chatting with you. And we look forward to doing it again.
Thank you very much, Roy.
It's a pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye now. Well, that was Carol Matthews. And Carol's a great writer. And we're going to have her on the show, and her husband as well, I think again next week. So we'll cover that a little bit later. But let's, for the moment, let's go to break, and then we come back, and Bob Fisher will be with us again. We're not going to let him get away easy today.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fare starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
Well, we've done a lot of no peanuts served here today, and they deserve it because there are no peanuts, and you do get a sandwich, and they are one of our better sponsors. So we don't mind giving them a little extra plug every now and then. It doesn't hurt anyone. Let's see, where are we at here with the show? I know we have Bob Fisher on the phone, and as I mentioned earlier, he's just returned from a fabulous trip to India, and we don't waste any time getting around and getting directly back to work. So good morning, Bob.
Good morning. I'm just sitting here having a glass of sherry.
Sherry?
So, well, I have a bit of a sore throat.
Oh, yes,
probably,
yes.
You know,
so it's strictly medicinal, yeah.
But, and I must apologize to Carol because I forgot to put one photograph up on her site.
Uh-oh.
She has a photograph of Rembrandt's famous night watch picture in tile. Anyway, so Carol, if you're listening, I'm just in the process getting that back up on the site too. But anyway, great story.
It was a great story, and Carol's great.
Yeah.
And it's right, Bob. Sometimes we don't get to cover some of these other wonderful areas. And the idea of walking around these towns and going to the museums and having something to eat is very appealing, certainly to me.
Yeah. So anyway, Roy, you want to go to North Carolina?
We're going to fly in that Wright Brothers airplane, are we?
Yeah. I'm going to embarrass you a little better.
Uh-oh.
Well, actually, you can sit back and blush and be a bit
uh-oh,
modest. I don't think most people don't realize where you're coming from in terms of, why you're the host of this show. People don't realize that your extensive airline background, you are a pilot yourself, a retired airline executive, but a pioneer, too. And that's what this article in the Outer Banks of North Carolina is all about, the Wright brothers. And not that many people know that you were a pioneer in the airline business in the United States, flying Air Cortez from California to Baja, California, and flying in DC-3s, 9-passenger twin beach aircraft, and landing in these tiny little towns long before it was the resort area it is now. And I understand you even had to chase a few cows off the dirt runways when you landed.
And it goes on and on. Actually, I've had some great mentors. The Eddie Rickenbackers, the Sir Freddie Lakers, even Howard Hughes, and so I've been very fortunate. I give away my age, I guess, by talking about some of this. But the Baja was particularly interesting in that there were times where we actually had to sleep on the airplanes because there was just nowhere to go. The few hotels in Laredo were either full or. And then we used to have 55-gallon drums of fuel because and sometimes you'd go into Guaymas and the fueling station wasn't open because it was a Sunday and everybody was out celebrating so we'd have in Mulegé especially you'd land right in front of the Serenidad Hotel and the Johnsons were wonderful people so we'd just leave some fuel there and hand pump it in. And then we had an arrangement with some of the it's history anyway, so it doesn't matter. We had an arrangement with the customs and immigration people in Guaymas on our departure. If they weren't there, we would just slide the manifest onto the door with a couple of bucks for some beer money, and off we go. But yes, those were great times, and there are a lot of great memories. And
well, you've entertained me lots of times, usually over a margarita, by the way. with airline stories, and I'll tell you this: the article I wrote, A Right Moment in North Carolina, and I was down there for the 100th anniversary of the Wright brothers. And first of all, I really want to.
Let me make something clear, because I wasn't there.
No, you weren't.
I didn't go quite. That was one event I missed.
You came after them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But the Outer Banks of North Carolina, first of all, which is where the first powered flight, their first powered flight
right.
occurred. And if you go to the website again and look at the picture, and I've been given permission to put the original archival photograph of that 12-second flight. And what, when I listen to you people in the airline business talk about your stories and I get so enthused because there's something really essential to the human imagination about flight. We know that right from the beginning of time, human beings have always wanted to fly. They wanted to do what the gods do. And you remember the mythology, the myths of Icarus, for example, and Daedalus everyone has wanted to escape gravity and get that different perspective, in a sense to get high, if you like. And when I went to the Outer Banks, which is a geological eccentricity itself, it is absolutely wonderful, but you can feel the intrepid spirit and the imagination that place engenders, because you've got the Atlantic on one side, you've got the bay on the other side, And these are, it's basically sand dunes that are shifting. And it's a perfect area for experimenting, of course, with flight, as you well know. And they were using gliders and kites and everything. But the senses, your senses there are so fully engaged. And here I go again, you know, the metaphorical experience, the poetic experience. But it's a place where your spirit can really soar. But it's, more importantly, you know, in this very important place in the United States, this was a threshold in human history, because this is where we changed from land-bound people to, you know, we learned to fly, and we could therefore travel, and we could travel great distances and really see human habitation from everywhere. And the, you know, the photograph that you see on the site, it was an amateur photograph of the moment, and it's a still photograph, but it's almost, it really is in motion, because you can see Wilbur running alongside of the flight in solidarity with his brother, and they've worked, a couple of bicycle repair guys, they've been working at this for years.
And
I think it's the timelessness of that event that really sticks out in my mind. And of course, what I it changed the course of history. It was a total conceptual shift in our world view. We could we could start to see things as, you know, in a much greater perspective. The thing that what I think is the essential genius of the Wright brothers and other people like them, other aviators, is that what they learned through practice, but what they learned to do was to, and you'll understand this entirely, but to affect stability and control by working within an unstable environment and working with the elements. And everyone else up to then had tried to do the opposite. They'd try to control, you know, the atmosphere, the air. I don't need to tell you this. It's an unstable environment.
Sometimes you need to think illogically, don't you?
Exactly. And you've got to, but you've got to work with the forces of nature.
Right.
And you've got to recognize that, and this is why it's so metaphoric, you've got to recognize that you are human, but that if you work with the forces of nature, and that of course is what they did,
and in 12 seconds of flight, it changed the world.
And so what I did, you know, and I'm not a young chicken anymore,
but
I decided that I would take a lesson in hang gliding.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and it was because I didn't know it at the time, but I knew I wanted just a very small taste of what Orville must have felt like, what he must have experienced. and the Outer Banks is a great place to do this because it's these huge sand dunes. And they'll take you up, and the day I did it, it was very windy, and I mean, it was, the wind had picked up, it was gusting up to 28 miles an hour, which if you're on a hang glider is pretty difficult. And here I am strapped to this thing. I've got wings, Roy.
I said, and I can fly.
Well, not yet, but they're telling me you're going to penetrate the air, and they're showing me how to shift my weight and do this and that and the other thing to penetrate that pocket. And then we start running down the dune, and then all of a sudden, there was just this exquisite moment of weightlessness and lift.
Yeah.
And the forward movement, and it was like a holistic experience that I am defying the law of gravity. But it was the softest and I think the most, probably the most peaceful sensation I've ever had.
Until India, that is.
Yeah, well, that too, yeah, but it's all about, you know, travel is all about flight.
Right? Yeah, it is, and we're flying out of time here,
yeah.
Bob, I think that it's a subject that we can get into. Maybe we can even have Sir Freddy on one day and chat about all
yeah.
of this. It'd be kind of fun.
And go for an air ride somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. Well, we should do
yeah.
that anyway. I'm going to get to tomorrow's guest, so I'm going
sure.
to thank you for joining us. I know you're tired, and I know you've got a lot of work to catch up on, too, and or catch up with. So we'll chat with you soon, and
okay. Thanks
for calling in.
Okay, have a good flight.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Bob Fisher, and he is kind of buried. He's got so much to do after getting back to India, and I know it, I really look forward to seeing his piece on India, which will be super, I'm sure. You can always check out our program schedule by going to ttrn.com for the latest guest information. And next week we'll have travel journalist Suzanne Wright, Carol Matthews, and Brian Matthews. So tune in at 11 a.m. next Wednesday to the Travel Talk Radio Network. And this is Roy Lowy saying bye to next week. Talking Travel is brought to you by the Travel Talk Radio Network, broadcast live from Florida's Sun Coast, 24/7 online at ttrn.com. Now back to the regular program and process.